Good morning. Man, that was good worship. Yes? I got one yes. Yes. I'm excited. This is always for me, this is always the best Sunday of the whole year. Not because I'm preaching, but because it's where the Lord is showing us a glimpse of what's going to be taking place over the next year. It says in Amos that he tells his people ahead of time what's going to unfold, what's going to happen. He does nothing without telling us. Nothing. So the question is if we're listening and if we're receiving, because he's talking. He's telling somebody. So this is exciting because, and I always love it, because this is, he gives us a glimpse of where he's taking us as a congregation, as individuals and a congregation over the next year. So this is, I want you to think of this word for yourself individually, and I want you to think of this word corporately, okay? So Elizabeth, if you'd bring up that slide. This is a little bit different this year because we have a phrase, we have a phrase, and then we have two steps. The steps are the crucial piece, but we're going to start with the phrase, praise me in true worship. Now, for those of you who are not worshipers, don't turn off your ears. Worship is not just singing like what we just did. We're going to talk about that today. There's a lot more to this than just singing. Praise me in true worship is the phrase. John 4, I'm going to start with this, reading the scripture. I'm going to give you a short definition of true worship, what that's supposed to really mean according to the Greek. And then we're going to get into the two steps because it's in the two steps where the meat of this is. True worship. I'm going to read John 4. I'm going to read verses 23 and 24. It says, but the hour cometh and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. True worshipers, the time is now for the true worshipers. That word true worship, when you look that up in the Greek, okay, you might not like this, but this is literally how they define it. They define it as a dog who wants to stay close to his master, a dog who has to lick his master's hand, who has to stay at the foot of his master. Now, if you've been around my house at all, you know we have this yellow lab, Tanner. Tanner's really, truly, if you wanted to see this in true life, what this is supposed to represent for us, when we're in the house, we've got this little baby crib mattress because she's old and she's arthritic. She's 10 and she creaks and groans and walks around like a 90-year-old sometimes. So we have this little mattress in the living room and that she on the floor that she can lay on. It don't matter if that mattress is there. If the mattress is not next to his chair, the dog is not laying on the mattress. The dog is going to go over next to the chair where Apostle is and lay down at Apostle's feet. The dog will not be away from him. The dog, he has tried for 10 years to get this dog to not lick him. The dog will do anything. The dog will not touch food on the floor if we tell her not to. She'll come if we tell her to come. We take her out on the roads, you know, on the two tracks, and she'll stay right by the truck. But do you think he can teach her not to lick? Nope. Because it is innate in the dog to show affection toward the head dog, toward the master. It is innate in the dog to be near the master. That is what the scripture is telling you that you should be like. When it says true worshipers, the time is coming for true worshipers. This means that you should have such a fire in your belly to be close to your master that it doesn't matter where you're at or what's happening or what's going on, you get peace. If you look at the nature of dogs, being near the master brings peace, it brings comfort, it brings security. And so as people, that's what this verse, the phrase is, when it says, praise me in true worship. Live your life such as you are that dog that has to be at my feet. Because you receive comfort and security. In spirit and in truth. I want to give you the quick definition of spirit in this verse. The influence which fills and governs the soul. The influence which fills and governs the soul. So again, in spirit, it is driving you. There's something in you that drives you to want to be in his presence, to stay close to him. And in truth is reality. It's in fact. And that is what it is. So that's our short definition. I'm not going to go into that further because I want to get into the two steps. There are two steps that are going to help us play this out this year. The first one is to stay in his presence. The second one is stop for the one who is in front of you. Now, we're going to talk about those two, but I'm going to have Elizabeth show us a little clip of a video first to help you get this sunk in your head of where we're going, okay? Many of you might have seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge. Yes, no, some of you. Don't start it yet. Just hold on for just one minute. Just you can leave me in the dark, but just okay. I just want to give you the background for those of you who have not seen this movie. This is takes place in World War II. We have a man who is a conscientious objector. He does not kill people. He does not touch a gun. He feels that the Lord is telling him that he needs to go represent his country. It's a true story. True story. Okay? He feels like the Lord is telling him that he needs to go represent his country. He needs to fight as a medic in the army. He goes to the army. He almost is, well, they take him through a court martial because he refuses to touch a gun. But he is insistent that the Lord's called him to this, and so he stays focused on that. The long story short is he ends up being allowed to go to war as a medic, not carrying a gun. They end up on this Hacksaw Ridge. They are trying to take, it's the Battle of Okinawa. They're trying to take Okinawa. That will give the United States a hands up on addressing the South Seas battles that are going on in the war. It's a crucial battle. At the point this clip starts, he is on the top of the ridge. His commander has called for the Americans to retreat. So everybody else is heading down over the ridge back to camp, back to base camp when this clip starts. And I'm just going to let this play for just a few minutes so that you can, I want you to think about two things. I want you to think about staying in his presence, how he does it. And I want you to think about that phrase, stop for the one in front of you. Elizabeth? Incredible what the human spirit can do when you're driven by the Lord's word inside of you, isn't it? The man went on to save 75 lives, one at a time, through the course of the night. 75 lives. So we're going to talk about, we're going to kind of use him today, kind of as I talk about these two points, coming back to this. First, stay in his presence. Stay in the Lord's presence. We look at Private Doss in the middle of an inferno going on around him. He's literally asking the Lord, telling him, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. He is so focused on doing what the Lord called him to do, which was to be a medic in the army, that in the middle of all of that, when everybody else is retreated, already down the cliff and back to base camp, he spends the night just keep going, one more, Lord, just one more. He keeps focusing. He never takes his eyes off of what the Lord called him to do. There's some things that I've got a verse up here, Exodus 33:11, because I like to give you a biblical example of this. There's a story about Moses and Joshua when the Israelites were in the camp in the desert, the 40 years. The cloud would descend, and you know the cloud represented the Spirit in the daytime. At night, they would have this pillar of fire, but they'd have this cloud, and the cloud would descend. And what would happen is the camp, the tabernacle, the tent, was outside of the camp. Now, the camp were over 5 million people. It's a big camp. But when the cloud would start to descend, Moses would leave the camp, and he would go to the tabernacle to have conversation with the Lord. And it says that the people, when they saw the cloud descending, they knew that Moses was going to be going to the tabernacle. They would go to their tent doors and they would stand in their tent door until the cloud started to descend or Moses came back to the camp. Except Joshua, a young man, who it says in Exodus 33 that he stayed in the presence. Because he followed Moses. Wherever Moses went, Joshua was like the dog clicking on the heels. Because Joshua wanted to stay in the presence of the Spirit of the Heavenly Father, of Jehovah, as long as he possibly could. So even when Moses would leave the tabernacle and head back, Joshua would stay. It says he stayed in the presence. That's what we're called to do. Now, what does that look like for us? What did it look for Private Doss? It was staying so focused that in the midst of anything that we've seen, for most of us, being able to rise above that and focus his eyes and say, Lord, what is it? What is it you want me to do? So we have to stay focused on what is ahead. Stay focused on what he's called us to. You cannot stay focused on what is immediately in front of you, because if you do, you're going to get swallowed up. You're going to get caught up in depression. You're going to get caught up in discouragement. You're going to get caught up in worrying about finances and all the other things that come with just living a normal life on this earth. We have to stay focused on who is in front of us, in what is coming, not on the immediate. The immediate will kill you spiritually. The immediate is what keeps you from finding your purpose. The immediate is what keeps you sitting at home instead of getting your butt into the church, into his house. Not because I'm telling you, you need to be in church, but it's because you have a drive. You are the dog that needs to be at the foot of the master. And can you find it when you're at home by yourself if you're sick or whatever? Yeah, but you can't find it if it's just, oh, it don't feel good today, or I'm upset or whatever, and I'm just not coming today. You have to stay focused and you have to stay, come find him. We have to bring hope. We are a people of hope. We are not a people of discouragement. We have to keep speaking life into people. You ever see Jesus in the Bible go up to some blind person and say, oh, too bad, you're going to just have to stay blind? Hope that lies within you. The hope that he has answers. The hope that he already has a plan for your life. The hope that he has something bigger that you can't even get your mind around. And it doesn't need money, and it doesn't need education, and it doesn't need experience. It needs you to say, Lord, I'm staying at your feet. That's hope. That's what the world is hungry for. That's what they're looking for. We need, of course, your prayers, your praise, your worship time. I'm just going to ask you one question. If you can get to work 40 hours a week, you can show up at work on a regular basis. You get there every day. You do your hours. You go home. Why can't you do your prayer time? Why can't you do your praise time? Why can't you? Why can't you? Why can't you? It's a priority. You have to understand what your role is and who you are. You're the dog at the master's feet. That's staying in his presence. Because you know that there's peace and security and comfort in that role. And so whatever I need to do to be there, to get there, I don't care how I feel. I don't care what my brain is telling me. I'm going to do this because I know absolutely that this is where I need to be to get myself out of this. We quit feeling sorry for ourselves. I had a conversation with somebody this week, and it was all of this. Mind. It's the battle of the mind. I've told you the verse over and over, Daniel 7:25, and it talks about the adversary wants to wear you down, and it is a mental wearing down. That's what the Hebrew is, mentally wearing you down. And you only combat that by getting in front of the Savior. It's praise, it's prayer time, it's worship, it is understanding that, my gosh, if I can get up and get to work and do what I want to do, even though I might not feel like I want to go to work, why can't I do that with what the Lord calls me to do? Just to be with him, just to stay in his presence. We have to do some self-examination with the Spirit. This is really hard because we don't want to self-examine. We sure don't like it when somebody else tells us what's wrong with us, but so then go to self-examine. Oh, we don't want to do that either because we aren't honest with ourselves. You have to look at yourself and really say, why am I doing it? Why am I responding like I do? And you have to push in and continue to ask him. You know, when I read, and I read a lot of books about experiential books about people who have done amazing signs and wonders with the Lord over the last 100 years, it's all the same thing every day. Lord, tell me what I did wrong today. Show me the spots in my life that I need to fix, that I need to correct. But we don't want to get in the chair, and we don't want somebody else telling us what to do, and we don't. Well, then you're going to stay right where you're at, because within us that creates spots of darkness, these black spots, and Jesus is all light. It pushes us further away from where the master is sitting, pushes us further away from his feet. You can't give way to offense. Can I list several things? You cannot give way to offense. You can't make assumptions. You can't gossip. You can't deal with passive aggressive. You can't hold on to the passive aggressiveness. You have to let it go. Because all of those things, again, they just continue to push you away. Because when Private Doss is, Lord, I can't hear you, and then the Lord is responding by giving him, you're not even going to recognize the voices. You're not going to recognize the voices that he's putting in your life to help pull you out of it. Because you'd rather hold on to your crud. And I'm just going to tell you, as somebody who has been there with offense and anger and hurt, I'm telling you, it feels really good on the other side. I was telling Pastor Betty, I've been working on this for quite a while, like my stuff and trying to get this all cleaned up. I'm telling you, the last two times, and my blood pressure's up. I was up. I mean, it was up huge. I can tell you, it started in 2013. A lot of things went bad in 2013. My blood pressure went way up through the roof. Haven't been able to get it down since, other than pills. Do you know, over these last 6 months, going into the doctor, my blood pressure has been at all-time lows since 2013. Oh, absolute lows. I'm about to tell her that I'm going to quit taking my pills, because one of these days it's going to get so low, I'm just going to start passing out on people, because I'm telling you, you have to let go of the stuff, that the baggage that you're holding on to. You make assumptions about people. You gossip about people. You get angry. Oh, nobody's talking to me. Nobody comes sees me. Well, get off your tush and go see them. It's not about you. We're going to get into that in step two. But you got to let go of these things that just cause stress and angst, because God made our physical bodies to respond negatively to those things, because those things are what drives them from Him. Think about it. He created our physical bodies to respond negatively to things like offense and anger and stress and anxiety and fear and all of those things. Why? Because He is none of those things. And it drives us away from Him. If we're laying at His feet and we start in with those things, we move back. That's how He physically created your body to work, because we are His creation and He wants us to be His children and He wants us to be at His feet. So we have to stay, we have to let go of those things. We have to get comfortable with the mystery. Comfortable with the mystery. I beg of you, quit asking the Lord why. Get why totally out of your vocabulary. Just remove it. Refuse to go there. Sometimes He privileges us and blesses us with giving an understanding of why. But there's many times that He won't. Because this is a faith factor. How many times as a little kid growing up, if your dad or your mom said, oh, we're going to do this, Why? You know when that starts? The older you get, the more whys come in. There's a reason we're supposed to come to Him as a little child. Doesn't say come as a child. It says come as a little child. Because I can tell you, Walrus, he ain't asking why. Titus is asking why. The older you get, the less childlike you become. The more you think that you're entitled to understanding why, and you are not. He is the Father. It is our job. The dog doesn't get explained to him why he can't come along with us. Oh, Tanner, I'm so sorry, but you know what? We're going to a party today, and you can't come in the house because there are 30 people that are going to be there, and you're just not, you're going to get hair all over him. Oh, no. No. It's not what happens. It's not what happens. What happens is, Tanner, you got to stay. Get back in the house. You have to get comfortable with the mystery. And the mystery is why He's doing what He's doing. Because every time why comes out of your mouth, what you're saying is, I am entitled to this. I'm your equal. And you're not. It's hard not asking why, but I'm telling you, there is a peace and a comfort that comes when you get to the point when you don't have to ask why. You're just going, Lord, I just know it's good, and I don't know what you're doing, but I'm okay with it. Let's go. You got to get comfortable with the mystery. Let's talk about staying in the presence. Stopping for the one who's in front of you. Now, I'm going to read this in Matthew. So let's go to Matthew 25. I have to understand, it's up there. Yeah, I'm going to read more than that, so hold on a minute. Let me see, sorry. 25, I got to get there in my Bible. 25. I want to back up a little bit. I had told her 40, but I want to add a couple verses. I want to start with verse 37. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee, or when were you thirsty and we gave you a drink, or when we saw you as a stranger and we took you in, or you were naked and we clothed you, or when did we see you sick or in prison and we came to you? And the king answered, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. This is going to be a hard one. This one might even be harder for you than staying in his presence. Although if you stay in his presence correctly, this will be an outcome. You have to stop for the one in front of you. What does that look like? Wow. So let's just talk about Jesus' example. So when the multitudes were following him, he stopped and he fed them first. Gave them actual food. He stopped when he was on one-on-ones and he listened when they needed to talk. Think about the woman in the well. He stopped and he listened to her. He taught. He touched. The least likely people. The people who collected the tax money. Those with leprosy. It didn't matter. He stopped. When did he do his time with the one-on-one? When did he stay in the presence? After all of the stopping was done. It was always after everything, everybody had gone home. He would stay up. You read in the New Testament. It would say he would go out by himself at night. Nobody else is awake. He'd go out and he'd do his stay in the presence time at that point. He would stop for the one who was in front of him. What does that look like for us? Wow. When was the last time, and I'm going to use several examples, but when was the last time that when you had lunch, that you bought lunch for somebody else? When was the last time that if you bought a new pair of shoes, that you bought a new pair of shoes for somebody else too? It says you clothed me. When you clothed me, should we go back to Matthew? When you fed me? When you clothed me? When I was thirsty? When was the last time that you bought a pop or a coffee for yourself and you went and bought a coffee for somebody else? Doesn't mean you have to know them. What happens as a church body if... I got to tell you, I'm taking a rabbit trail here for a minute, but on our Thursday night group, which I encourage you all to come to Thursday nights because it's amazing, but come to Thursday night group, Al and Beverly are working on little cards for us. Be able to hand out cards. What happens if you had one of their crazy little cards that they were creating, we're going to come up with, and you stopped at Starbucks to get your coffee, and you bought a coffee for the person behind you, and you handed them a card? And said, you know what, I'm just doing this because this is what Christ called me to do. Pine Grove Church of God. Wow. Think about it. Think about how that changes. Think about how that opens opportunities. Think about that, how that plants seeds. You know, it says in Mark, and we talked about it in Growing Time, it says, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. That means that you don't make assumptions about what's going on with somebody because you don't want somebody making assumptions about you. That means that if somebody is needing, you know, if I need help doing something, then guess what? I ought to be able to find somebody to help them do something. I know that there's many times when, I'll just use the ladies and their pillows, okay? They take time and they make pillow after pillow, stuff it pillow. When was the last time the church, did you look around and say, oh man, maybe I should do something for them? That's what this is talking about. In every aspect of your life, you love your neighbor as yourself. So how do you want to be treated and how do you respond? What do you like for them to do? I keep telling my boss, because there's so many changes at work, it's been a nightmare. Okay, it's just been one flipping nightmare. And I just keep telling her, I just want them to treat us how they would want to be treated, and this isn't it. When they're jumping down your throat because you actually do something right, but it's not good enough right. Do you want that to happen to you? Do you want somebody to tell you that even though you did it right, it wasn't good enough, right? It's not how you treat people. It's not how you want to be treated. Love your neighbor as yourself. We have to learn how to demonstrate this to people. This is Private Doss. He didn't want to be loved. Alive, 75 men, one by one, pulling them and getting them over the ridge. And this is a pretty accurate movie. He refused to do it for years. He'd been approached for years and years and years to do this movie, allow this, his story. And he wouldn't do it until he was assured absolutely that it was as accurate as it could possibly be. And the only part of it that is Hollywood story is the beginning piece, not the battle piece. The battle piece is accurate. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do I want to be left laying there when I'm alive? If you watch the whole movie, there's one clip in here where there is a guy and the other medic says, he's dead, he's as good as dead, leave him. And the man is crying out, I have children, I have family, please don't leave me, please don't leave me, please don't leave me. And Doss picks him up, carries him, tells the people to get him over the edge. And then you see this man later on in the clip in the tent with the docs, and they've patched him and he's recovering. What do you want? You want to see transformation? You want to see things happen in your life? Maybe you start looking outside of yourself and pouring into somebody else and stopping for the one who's right in front of you. And you do what Doss did. You ask, Lord, what do I do? You can't stop for every single one, but you can stop and you can ask, and the Lord will talk to you and tell you if this is the one that you stop for or not. Who are you pouring into? We have to demonstrate his love because we can see this is awesome. This is another awesome thing that I'm going to tell you. So we do that because we can see, it goes back to being in his presence. Because when you are in his presence and you have hope, you see potential. So when somebody's right in front of you, you're stopping for the one in front of you, you can see Christ's plan for their life. You can see the potential that Christ intended in their life. You don't see all the crap. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what they did. It doesn't matter who they are right now in front of you. What matters is that you see through Christ's eyes and you see who God called them to be. It doesn't matter. We've seen about everything we could possibly see come through the doors and through deliverance ministry. I'm telling you, we've seen about everything I think we can see. And then surely something else comes in the door and I'm like, oh my gosh. It's not about that. It's about seeing who God intended them to be. That's what we're supposed to do. That's how you can stop for the one in front of you, because when you're stopping, you're seeing potential. You know, Bob Pierce, he is the founder of World Vision. Now, World Vision was intended and started to be a mission work that addressed poverty needs and education needs for children. So to keep this in his focus, whenever Bob Pierce would do his private prayer time, you know how he stopped for the one in front of him to keep it in front of him, his purpose? He bought a globe. And every time he would do his private prayer time, he would pray with his arms wrapped around the globe. Wow. Wow, what is it that you need as a visual in your life to keep you reminded that God has people every day that he is putting in front of you that he wants you to stop for? You need a globe? What is it? He knew that he needed something to keep it fresh in front of him on a daily basis. He prayed with his hands around the globe. We don't do it for the wrong reasons. several of us, I just throw this in here because there's several of us that are performance oriented. You're not doing this to get pats on the back. You're not doing this to get noticed. You're not doing this so people or even the Lord says, oh, good job. You're doing this because he commanded you to do this, and you are the dog at the master's feet. And when the master says, love your neighbor as yourself, that's all that is required for you to fulfill the command. That's all the direction you need. You don't need the pats on the back. You don't need the acknowledgments. You don't need. You just need to know that this is the commandment and this is why I'm doing it. I'll tell you, there are rewards that come out of it because a loving master takes care of his pooch. I'm telling you, that dog eats more little bones. What's the brand? Milk-Bone. We probably keep Milk-Bone in business. In Proverbs, it says, to the one who gives to the poor, to the one in need, it says that you are lending to the Father. And it says that the Father will repay all of that and more. So the Father pays back with interest. But that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because our Master commanded us to do it, to stop for the one in front of us. Praise me in true worship. That's true worship. That's where he wants to take us this year. He wants us to be private DOS. He wants us to be in any given situation, death, life, good prosperity, poor finances, sickness, health, any given situation, he needs us to stay in his presence, to be so tuned in to him that we rise above the fray and we say, what do you want here, Lord? I need to hear your voice. It's an automatic that we go to him. It's automatic. It's instinctual. And then he wants us to stop for the one in front of him, front of us. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily bringing them all to the Lord. It doesn't even necessarily mean you're bringing them all to the church. That's irrelevant because it's kingdom. If they come, that's wonderful. But we are kingdom people. So if you are stopping for somebody and you are planting seeds, that is what we're called to do. We plant seeds. What would life look like if you determined in this next year that if you buy something for yourself, you're not going to buy it unless you have money to buy it for somebody else too? What does that look like? What does that look like? What does it look like when you take time out of your schedule and call somebody or spend time with them just to enjoy being with them because the Lord's prompted you? What does it look like when you're out in the community and you see somebody struggling? I'll tell you a story. Okay, Carol was in the nursing home, you know, getting rehab. And I'm just going to tell on Nancy and Betty because Nancy and Betty were riding up and down the elevator trying to help people while they were moving things back and forth for Carol. Stopping for somebody. Something as simple as that makes an impact. One more. Give me one more, Lord. One more, Lord. Just give me one more. Would you come worship? Yeah, I'm going to have the worship team come and close us. We're going to be praising him in true worship, but it's really the steps one and two that are crucial. We have to get our head around it. You want your world turned upside down like no other year? Commit yourself to these two things. Ask the Lord to show you what it looks like and what to do. You're struggling, you reach out to people around you and say, hey, I'm struggling with this one, help me. I'm falling off here, help me. You want your world turned upside down? These two things will do it.